Welcome, everybody, to our short 30-minute Inland Port board meeting today. We really appreciate Ben, you, and Amy, and Larry, Lynn, everybody. I know even though this is a very focused meeting, no action items, it still takes a lot of work to pull it together. And the purpose of this meeting, I think this is important to highlight, is from the beginning as a board, we've been very much committed to complete transparency, accountability, getting great public input. We're grateful for the members of the community that have helped us put in place this process by which we can get appropriate public input onto different policies before we go ahead and vote on those. And so today's meeting is informational in nature. We're not required to have a quorum. All the board members received emails with these policies, so they're very well aware of them, and they'll have an opportunity to get the input that we get from the public today on these. We'll then see these same policies at our next meeting, at which point I believe, barring any, you know, significant changes, we would then in a quorum vote to approve them. But let's go ahead and jump into the agenda. I want to make sure we have enough time at the end for public comment within the time that we have scheduled today. Victoria, it's good to see you on screen. Thank you very much for joining us. And Ben, I don't know if there's any introductory remarks you want to make, Ben. If not, we can go straight to Amy for the presentations on the tax differential policy and the Authority Infrastructure Bank.
Yeah, let me just give a little bit of context. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then if it's okay, we'll go to Amy if that's all right.
Okay, perfect. Take it away, Ben.
All right, so let me give just a little bit of context for those who are with us online today. First, thank you for being with us. Second, some time ago, we were working with some of those residents and stakeholders on the west side of Salt Lake City, and we recognized that we wanted to have a very open and transparent policy process. To do that, we recognized that just having policy in a meeting and adopting it the first time was not the transparency they were looking for. It wasn't, and we agreed. And so as we are moving forward with the Inland Port progress and rebuild and all of the good things that we feel like are happening, we recognize that we made a commitment that we would have every policy in two meetings. So today, this meeting is not for action items. We are not taking any action items, any action on any of these items. Rather, what we're doing, this meeting is for the public, meaning that we want to bring two policies that the board and the port are considering for adoption at our next full meeting in March, what's tentatively planned for March. But before we can do that, we recognize we needed to have a public display for these two policies, which are for the project area and for our infrastructure bank. And there is a lot of underlying story that goes with both of these policies, but and I'll let Amy talk through the dynamics of that. But in short, we wanted to ensure that the public had a chance to be aware of these two policies and that we did not just bring them forward to the board for adoption within one meeting. And so all of these we feel like mean that we're making very good progress. But more than anything else, it's our commitment to be transparent with these policies. So we recognize that we have several individuals, probably all of our board members to a certain degree, who are involved with the legislative session. We recognize that trying to do this right before the legislative session started was going to be a little bit difficult. So we'll probably have board members who are coming on and off. But I would just say, I think we've had a chance to visit with the board members, help them understand why we're doing this. So I think there's good understanding. So I think this meeting is more about public transparency and ensuring that the public has a chance to weigh in on these topics. So with that foundation, we'll go to Amy, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Yep, that's great. Thank you, Ben, for setting the stage. And Amy, go ahead and turn it over to you. Hey, Amy, I'm sorry to interrupt. We're having a hard time online hearing you. I want to make sure that both Victoria and I, and of course all the members of the public online, can hear what you're saying.
All right. Okay, perfect. Thank you. So I wanted to thank you for this opportunity to present this to the board and to the public. Wanted to make one thing of note, in case there's any concerns from our last board meeting, we do have the other three outstanding policies that we're still reviewing, personnel record retention and segregation of duties. So those will be brought to the next board meeting for approval. But if there's any questions from the public, I did want to address it at this time. As we move forward, I want to talk about BPO4, project area and property tax differential use. This used to be titled just the property tax differential use policy. We realized, and as we approved in the last board meeting in December, these really needed to be enhanced to include more information that's tied to that strategic plan. When you look at the development of regional projects and the development of project area master plans, as well as the strategic financing options that we have. And that's why we decided to enhance this policy in this direction. This policy outlines how we would go about, that takes the statute, but how we would go about incorporating a new project area from the public meeting aspect, where we'd be convening with the municipality and local jurisdiction, to what the UIPA board meeting would adopt. And I think I'm going to just highlight the four key areas of what a project area plan would entail that really leverages what is currently in statute. We have a defined public purpose, a public benefit, a completed initial environmental review, area boundaries, and a project area budget. So those are those critical components that will be part of our project area plan. We also wanted to highlight we have a project area master plan process. You've seen that we have the approach that we approved last board meeting for the Northwest Quadrant. We also plan on going into a master plan process with other offerings that we have as project areas, and also as we deal with the property tax differential. And that can be used specifically for areas around affordable housing, development funding, and then we also have a section on how we would deal with a business recruitment incentive and how we would hold accountability in post-incentive approval and going forward with that. So that is the highlights of this policy. I will pause here if we have any board questions or comments at this time.
Thank you, Amy, for all the work that you've put into this. Victoria, do you have any questions or comments at this point?
I don't have any questions, but I do want to point out that, Amy, you are, in your diligence, one of the recurring reasons why my neighbors and I can rest well at night, knowing that codifying these things in ways that enshrine accountability and transparency and predictability for us. So thank you. I'm so pleased with these policies and so thankful for the work that you've done.
Thank you. And tell your neighbors to comment on these if they have interest in it. And you can do so between sessions as well. Of course, we have public commentary on that. If in that case, we'll turn over to our new policy. This is BP13, our Authority Infrastructure Bank. We really wanted to outline how this process would work. I wanted to highlight this policy is owned by Ben Byes, our CFO. Our other policy I presented on really makes sense for Ben Hart to be the owner and the driver on this. I will say both of these have been a team effort to get these drafted. We wanted to highlight with our AIB policy how we look at loan criteria, what we're going to be asking for from these applicants, how we would go through the evaluation process. We are having proposed a loan review subcommittee. Their responsibility in receiving, assessing, and submitting these applications to the loan approval committee. And the loan approval committee is codified in our statute. Their responsibility is to review and approve any of these loans, as well as adhere to 1158-106, for anyone that's interested in researching that further. After the loan evaluation, we wanted to really highlight the application documents that we'd be looking for, and how and what those would entail. And that really summarizes how we're going to be overseeing the AIB policy. So I will pause here, and again, if there's any board comments or questions at this time.
Great. Thank you, Amy. You know, just thinking about it, both with BP13 and BP04, and hearkening back to our last meeting where we approved the strategy, I think it's important to point out, you know, we all want to get as much detail as possible. But what I'm so grateful for the work that Amy, you and Ben and everybody else on the team are doing is that strategy, that business plan gives us the foundation. We talked a lot about that last time. These policies then create the framework in which we can go and start to execute and drive towards these objectives and start moving the direction that we've determined we need to go into based off of the business plan. And so I hope that members of the public that are joining this meeting and also were in the last meeting can appreciate the work that goes into both figuring out what direction we need to go, what's the framework and the processes that are going to ensure that we're moving in the right direction and doing so in a way with great transparency and accountability. And then as we continue to move forward, we will dive deeper and deeper into the details to execute tactically. So I don't have any specific comments. I appreciate all the input, the heads up on these things that I've received. Victoria, looking at BP13, any questions, comments, input you'd like to provide?
No questions or concerns. Thank you for making this clear and predictable and accountable and transparent.
Great. Thanks, Victoria. Amy, anything else that you'd like to add before we move to the public comment period?
I would just like to remind the public, and we greatly appreciate the very thoughtful feedback that we get on our policies. And if you have feedback after this meeting, please go to our website, go to our Contact Us page. I think it's in the upper right-hand corner of our site. Fill out that form and let us know how you feel we could make this better. Again, I feel that public comment on these policies are awesome. So please keep it up. Thank you.
Yep, that's great, Amy. And I'd second that wholeheartedly. The public comment we've received, this process that we are going through is the direct result of incredibly constructive feedback that we've gotten from the public. And so we do appreciate the partnership, many that are on the call today and others that are not in this meeting. So with that, we'll go ahead and move to the public comment portion of the meeting. Larry, this is the first time that I've been doing this virtually and also managing public comment both in person there and virtually. And so just want to remind everybody that each will go in the order in which people either raise their hand virtually or submit cards in person. Each commenter will get 2 minutes and we'll do everything we can to get through all those that would like to make comments before we have to end the meeting. At this point, it's open if you're online to raise your hand. If you'd like to make a comment, you can present cards. My guess is anybody in person has already done that, but if not, now's the time to go ahead and submit a public comment card. And then Lynn, I see you there on screen. And so I will turn to you if that's okay to help us walk through who is in person or the appropriate order online. Oop, Lynn, I'm sorry, I'm not hearing.
We, Mr. Chair, we have nobody in the room that would like to make comments. And I think I just saw that we had 3 people online.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and we can jump in with those online. And I don't see, I'm looking on my ends. Okay, so I see 2 hands up, Joan and Craig. And so let's go ahead and start, Joan, with you.
Hi, this is Joan Gregory, and I've been a resident of Salt Lake City for over 35 years. I noticed that one as I was preparing for this comment period. I want to thank you for this unique way of following the process with this meeting that you've set up and the one you may be setting up in February. We really appreciate that, especially those on the Communications Improvement Team. I have talked to a number of folks. I hope that they will also be commenting next on the line and about some concerns that they have. They are much more knowledgeable than I, and so I'm going to leave those comments to them. Today, my question is, what is the Utah Inland Port Authority doing to save the Great Salt Lake? What is your plan? What significant actions will UEFA be taking immediately to save our Great Salt Lake to save your Great Salt Lake, your ecosystem from ecological collapse. Get water to the Great Salt Lake now. If you have not read the report prepared by BYU Professor Ben Abbott and his research team titled Emergency Measures Needed to Rescue Great Salt Lake from Ongoing Collapse, I strongly urge you to do so. The link is cws.byu.edu/great-salt-lake. And I'll send you that via the UEPA written comment form on the UEPA website at inlandportauthority.utah.gov/contact so that you have it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Joan, for your comment. Because this is an issue that I personally care a lot about, I'm grateful for Governor Cox's leadership, who just a couple of days ago said, on my watch, we are not allowing the lake to go dry. We will do whatever it takes to make sure that doesn't happen. I'm grateful for leadership in the Senate and the House, the city, among all of our partners. And so we look forward to playing our role as a port authority in that effort. Okay, let's go ahead and go to Craig.
Can you, I'm just trying, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep, we hear you loud and clear.
I want to make sure I get acknowledgement. Hi, my name is Craig Wallentine. I'm a retired business executive living here in Utah. I want to thank you for this opportunity. You provided the public to make some short comments about the draft business policies you're considering today. My first comment is a recommendation to correct what I think is a typographical error in section 5. Definitions in business policy number 4 concerning the proper project area and property tax differential. In section 2 of that draft, the regulatory and legislative requirements, Utah Civil Code 1158-6 is cited, and specifically I think it's referring to UCA 11-58-603. In that section it reads that the definition of a high-paying job pays at least 130% of the average of all wages within the county, et cetera. In the draft that was sent out that I saw, the public PDF, it said in section 5, in that draft, it appears to be a typographical error that states that the high-paying job is defined at only 110% of the average of all wages. So my suggestion is that this draft business policy be updated to be consistent with the civil code cited and with the original intent of the legislature when it adopted the 130% objective in HB 443. So that's my first comment. My second comment, just wanted to build on what Chairman Hansen, you said about the importance of business plans. And specifically, I'd like to recommend addition of one word to section 11, application documents in business policy number 13 concerning the Authority Infrastructure Bank. Specifically, there's a description of what a business plan should be required in that part. I've personally written and reviewed many business plans over the decades, and I suggest that one word be added to those requirements. The draft currently reads the business plan should include an executive summary, description of products, services, target marketing, marketing strategy. That's all great. However, the next catch-all line in Section 11 is unclear to a knowledgeable reader, and it simply lists neighborhood/human/environmental impact. And I think it'd be much more clear and more actionable by the applicant if the single word health was added after human so that the requirement would read neighborhood, human health, and environmental impact. I think the small change would make the policy more functional, and it also would show that the board members of the Inland Port Authority are as concerned with protecting and promoting the health of all Utahns as obviously you are in promoting important economic growth. Thanks very much for the chance to comment.
Craig, thank you so much for your substantive input. Great input all around. And this is a perfect example of the partnership with the public, how we, all of us working together, can refine and improve what we're doing. So thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Okay, looks like we've got one more commenter. Malin Minch, we'll go ahead and go to your comment.
Thank you. My name is Malin Minch. I'll just talk about the business incentive policy statement, but my concerns apply to selecting projects within project areas. and to selecting recipients of infrastructure bank loans. Regarding business recruitment incentives, nothing in these policies prevents actual or the appearance of undue influence by applicants. They, quote, negotiate the details of the incentive with a UEFA staffer, presumably behind closed doors, and then part of the board joins the negotiations, still presumably behind closed doors, where the incentive package is tweaked and then presented to the rest of the board for approval. This is basically a procurement process, a jobs procurement, without the standard procurement safeguards. No advance public notice that UEFA is contemplating an incentive program of a particular kind, let alone notice that UEFA staff will be negotiating a customized package with a particular stakeholder. No requirement that minutes of those meetings be kept or disclosed. No record of decision and no findings of fact that other applicants or the public could challenge prior to the award. If such procurements occurred at the federal level, applicants would be looking at an RFP that had detailed criteria that their bids would have to meet. All stakeholders would have equal notice and equal opportunity to bid for the incentive. Secret communications on the merits between an applicant and the board or its staff would be forbidden, and unsuccessful applicants would have a right to appeal the board's decision. Most states don't follow the federal model, but at least their ad hoc recruitment incentives are approved by the legislature after public debate. Could UEFA at least keep minutes of these ex parte communications in a public file and submit the recruitment incentives formulated to the legislature for public debate and approval? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, could I just respond to a couple of those things real quick?
Yeah, go for it, Ben.
Malin, those are really, really good comments. At your suggestion, we'll go ahead and work as a staff during the next month or 2 months or whatever it is between now and when they're adopted, to flesh that out a little bit more. You recognize something that's very, very valuable. We're trying to work that dynamic a little bit, not only here at the policy level, but also at the statute level, because there is some statute that is reflective of this as well. So, Malin, you make some really, really good points. I think by the time this one gets finalized in front of the board for final adoption, we'll make a commitment that we will improve upon that, have a better process, understanding, and standard contained within the policy.
Thank you, Ben, for that. And Malin, thanks for your feedback. And again, at a board level, again, we've talked about it a lot today, transparency, accountability, and partnership, so that we're getting the best input from as many sources as we can as we go out there to fulfill our fiduciary and statutory responsibilities. So, okay, well, that is all of the people that would wish to comment. We're at 4 o'clock, right on time. And so, Ben, unless there's anything else, we can go ahead and adjourn today's meeting.
I think we are good to adjourn. Mr. Chair, just one thing real quick. I do want to recognize Andy Holka, who is in the room with us today. Andy is not newly, because I think you've been on the job for a couple months, but one of our liaisons within the Salt Lake County Planning Salt Lake City Planning Office. I just want to say I feel like the relationship with Salt Lake City, I hope, is better than it's ever been. And we feel like we're making really good progress. I hope. I don't want to speak for anybody else. I'll let, since we have a Salt Lake City official on the board, elected official, but I do want to just recognize his good work, the partnership that we have, and step by step, I hope we're able to bridge the transparency guide and just, bring people together for what can be a great win for the west side of Salt Lake.
That's really great, Ben. Andy, thanks for being there. Thanks for the partnership, this relationship between the city and the state and the private sector, the community. It's absolutely critical. We're all one team, rowing in the same direction. So thanks, Andy, for that input. And Ben, thanks for giving us a heads up that Andy was there. Okay. Let's go ahead then. I don't believe, since today's meeting was informational, not taking action, I don't believe we need to take a vote to adjourn the meeting. So, unless somebody disagrees, we will go ahead and conclude. Thank you, everybody.